Hosea, book of Hosea, and chapter 7. All right, Hosea chapter 7. All right, so as we've indicated here, Hosea is dealing with the northern kingdom that's gone into great apostasy, and the Lord is going to deal with them. In fact, they've been in apostasy for 209 years. It's from 931 down to 722. So 209 years they were in apostasy. The Lord was gracious to them, tried to deal with the nation by sending prophets who would preach to the northern kingdom from time to time and try to get the hearts changed around. Even though they lived in a wicked land, the Lord sent prophets. When they had all of their 19 kings were wicked, he sent prophets. Now, in the southern kingdom, not all the kings were wicked, but the Lord sent prophets when there were good kings. So the Lord used prophets such as Hosea and Amos and Isaiah and Jeremiah and these men, Ezekiel, to challenge the people, whether under good leadership or bad leadership, the people had to have their hearts right with the Lord. So, and that's a truth for us today as well, that in our nation, we need to have our hearts right with the Lord, regardless of the leadership of the land. And that will be true next Sunday as well. All right, and so that's the main theme. Here, we pick it up here in chapter 7, so he basically, chapter 6, indicated their judgment and the fact that he was going to bring judgment because of their sin. Notice, before we get started, 6:6, he says, I desired mercy and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. All right, this reminds us of the theme verse I had in Micah last week for the church. This is Micah 6:8. Notice here, Micah chapter 6. In fact, we can look here in 6:7 and 6:8. Micah 6:7 and 8. 6:7 says, will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams or with 10,000 of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression and the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? It's Micah 6:7. Micah 6:8. He has showed thee, O man, what is good, and what doth the Lord require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. So in other words, the Lord's not interested in empty sacrifices. He wants sacrifices that will come from the heart. And so the Lord is saying, I'm not interested in thousands of lambs and rams and so on. What I'm interested in is that you behave justly and walk humbly. So how can they do that? There's only one way for them to do that and have their heart right the Lord. See? So not interested in empty worship. He wants a righteous behavior. But a righteous behavior only comes from a changed heart. So if you don't have a changed heart, what kind of behavior are you going to have? You're going to have empty worship at best. It's going to be empty. It's going to be unrighteous. So he has to deal with them that way. Now, we get into chapter 7. And remember now, Hosea, his audience. Back there in 1:1, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam. All right, Jeroboam. So this is Jeroboam the second. So really, we have two Jeroboams. Mentioned this before. Just want to let it catch your mind. But Jeroboam the first, Jeroboam the second. And in between the two Jeroboams, basically, these are like bookends to all the kings. The first Jeroboam was a terrible, terrible, wicked king. The last Jeroboam was a terrible, terrible, wicked king. Basically, that's the history of Israel. Now, there's six more kings after Jeroboam, but they are absolutely worthless. They are worse than Jeroboam, and we're going to see some of that here. as well. And so we're dealing here in Hosea, shortly before 722. And notice now as we go through this, because we're going to talk about the kings in verse 7. Before we get there, let's notice in 7:1, "And when I would have healed Israel, then iniquity of Ephraim was discovered, and the wickedness of Samaria." So notice, Israel, Ephraim, Samaria. These are all terms for the northern kingdom. Israel, of course, the northern kingdom at this point. From the time of Jeroboam the first, the name Israel then began to refer to the 10 north tribes, and Judah referred to the 2 southern tribes. Prior to this, Israel was one. Later on, the use of Israel will be when they're one again, but now they're divided. And so Ephraim, that was the large tribe north of Jerusalem there. And then Samaria was within the Ephraim, the area of Samaria. And so these are synonyms for the northern kingdom. Notice here he says iniquity for Ephraim, wickedness of Samaria, for they commit falsehood, they're deceivers. So understand that. Those that deceive are deceived. Active deceiving, passive being deceived. So we got the idea here. Those who deceive are deceived. That's the basic of the old nature. You're deceptive, you're going to deceive.
Amen.
And the thief cometh in, and the troop of robbers spoileth without. So here, he's already mentioned it, troops of robbers, back there in verse 9, the previous chapter, 6-9, as troops of robbers wait for man. So the company of priests murder in the way by consent. So priests were murdering. Priests were murdering. Others were murdering. Remember, the Jeroboam, the first priesthood, was of non-Levites and of the lower class of people. Here's just throughout. So notice the nation there. Iniquity, wickedness, falsehood, thieves, robbers, spoiling. That's the description of the northern kingdom. When any nation ever puts the Lord aside, how do you think things are going to turn out? In some sort of a utopia where everybody loves everybody? A utopia. We just love everybody and we all get along. No, not going to be a utopia. It's going to be a utopia. It's going to be the opposite. Here's the description. Verse 2, "And they consider not in their hearts that I remember all their wickedness." So the Lord knows the hearts of people. He knew the hearts of their wickedness. He knew what they were doing and so on. Again, Micah, fresh on my mind. So if you look there in Micah chapter 2, Micah is indicating in chapter 2, verse 1, "Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it because it is in their power of their hand. They covet fields, they do violence, and so on." In other words, first thing that these Jews thought of was, when they woke up in the morning, how can I get some poor person's land, or their riches, or how can I increase everything I want? How can I do that? The Lord knew their plans. So, is that what you wake up with in the morning? How can I deceive somebody today? How can I get more wealth today? How can I benefit myself today? Is that what you wake up thinking? How can I deceive somebody today? Well, that's what they were thinking. The Lord knew what was in their heart. So verse 2, back here to 7:2. "They consider not their hearts that I remember all their wickedness." They consider not their hearts. they may be thinking, I can't even remember what evil thing I was thinking about last week. Really, did I think about that? I probably did. But the Lord doesn't forget what's in the hearts of mankind. And of course, all this will be, it will come out for the unsaved at the great white throne judgment. And he will bring out all their evil thoughts. He will judge them. He will demonstrate to them, with the three books at the great white throne judgment, Revelation 20, that he is just and holy. But likewise, the Lord remembers what's in the heart of believers. So he knows all hearts. All right, so notice in later on, chapter 7, verse 14, and they have not cried unto me with their heart when they howled upon their beds. So here the Lord's back to dealing with their heart. All right, so he goes on to say in 7:2, now their own doings have beset them about. They are before my face. Lord knows exactly what they're doing, what they're thinking. By the way, the Lord knows that today. He knows what everybody's doing. He knows what deception's going on, what evil's going on, and he knows all these things. All right, now verses 3 and following says, they make the king glad with their wickedness, and the princes with their lies. All right, so the king of the northern kingdom, of course, was wicked, and so he can rejoice in wicked people. This is what I want. Everybody lines up with me in wickedness, and the princes with their lies. All right, now, in verses 4 through 7, he uses the metaphor of a heated oven, of an oven. So here we have a little bit of oven theology. Verse 4, oven. Verse 6, oven. Verse 7, oven. So he uses the illustration here, metaphoric language here. It's as if somebody heats an oven to cook something. And so they get the oven heated up. But while the oven is heating, they're not cooking. And then later on, they come back to the oven and they cook. So that's kind of the idea. So he's in the metaphorical language that he's using, or figurative language anyway. There's an oven cooking, and while the oven is cooking, nothing is being cooked. So the evil people are having a secret plot, as it were. But then at some point, they're going to demonstrate their secret plot and to come full force with it. So it's like heating an oven. It's just heating over there. You're not using it. And then at some point, you're going to use the oven. So they're conspiring with secret conspiracies. And then it's going to be manifest later on. That's the analogy there. So notice he says there, they are all adulterers. As an oven heated by the baker, who ceaseth from rising after he hath kneaded the dough until it be leavened. So in other words, he heats the oven, lets the dough rise, but he's not actively using the oven. So they're likened to a baker here. And kneading the dough. Verse 5, in the day of our king, the princes have made him sick with bottles of wine. He stretcheth out his hand with scorners. So in other words, they were behind secret plots concerning kings. And so they get their king drunk. They get their king drunk. Now, it goes on, same verse 4, for they have made ready their heart like an oven whiles they lie in wait. So this is a secret plot or conspiracy against the kings of the northern kingdom. So the kings of the northern kingdom were wicked, wicked men, and here we have wicked, wicked people and others who want to do wicked things to wicked kings. And so they have a secret plot whiles they lie in wait. Their baker sleepeth all night. In the morning it burneth as a flaming fire. So all of a sudden they come out of a secret plot and they enact it. And verse 7, we'll see the reality of this. They are all hot as an oven. They have devoured their judges. All their kings are fallen. There's none among them that calleth unto me, Lord says. Now notice this, all their kings are fallen. Now, this demands us to go back to 2 Kings chapter 15. All right, so we're in 2 Kings 15, and we have reference in 15:1. Let's look there. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, that's Jeroboam the second. That brings in Azariah, the southern kingdom, but let's move forward here. In verse 8 now, so we're moving beyond Jeroboam the second. So verse 8, in the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, did Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reign over Israel and Samaria 6 months. So here's Zechariah, son of Jeroboam the second. So Jeroboam the second is off the scene now. Now another king of the northern kingdom, Zechariah. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, as his fathers had done. So in 6 months, you know, in a 6 month period of his reign, he does evil. I mean, he didn't even wait around. I mean, jump right into it. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. So here we have son of Nebat. All right, now that's Zechariah 10, and Shallum, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him, against Zechariah, and smote him before the people, and slew him, and reigned in his stead. So here we see the beginning of regicide. Regicide is the killing of kings. Regicide. Royalty, regicide, killing of kings. So Zechariah takes over, does evil. Shalom comes along, kills him. So here's the evil king doing evil, and the evil comes right back on him because he's killed, assassinated. And so here we have Shalom. And verse 11, and the rest of the acts of Zechariah, behold, they are written in the book of Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. This was the word of the Lord which he spake unto Jehu, saying, thy son shall sit on the throne of Israel unto the fourth generation. And so it came to pass. So Jehu would have four sons sitting, because remember he killed Ahab and Jezebel. So he's commended for that, but he killed too many more people, and so he was condemned for that. But so here we see the beginning of his dynasty, as it were, continuing here. And so Shalom now is king. And verse 13, Shalom, the son of Jabesh, began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah. And he reigned a full month in Samaria. All right, so we move from 6 months now to 1 month. For Menahem, the son of Gadi, went up from Tirzah and came to Samaria and smote Shalom, the son of Jabesh of Samaria, and slew him and reigned in his stead. So now we have Zechariah takes over, reigns for 6 months. He's assassinated. Shalom comes along. He assassinates him. He does evil. He reigns for a month, and he's killed. Menahem then comes along, kills him. And the rest of the acts of Shalom and his conspiracy which he made, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of Kings of Israel. Then Menahem smote Tifsah and all that were therein, the coast thereof, Tirzah, because they opened not to him. Therefore he smote it, and all the women therein that were with child he ripped up. So here we have this terrible Menahem now. He kills people, even women who are with child. Just delights in this. Cut their stomachs open. And in the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, began Menahem, the son of Gadi, to reign over Israel, and he reigned 10 years. So he's got 10 years in. So he's assassinated Shalom. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, and departed not in all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. And Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver. And this is that his hand might be with him to confirm the kingdom in his hand. So here he's bought off by an outside source. Assyria. Not China, but Syria. All right. And Menahem exacted the money of Israel, even all the mighty men of wealth, and each man 50 shekels of silver to give the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and stayed not there in the land. So he buys off time with the Assyrian, and he goes after the wealthy. He goes after the wealthy and gets their money, taxes the wealthy, to buy off the king. And the rest of the acts of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings? And Menahem slept with his fathers, and Pekahiah, his son, reigned in his stead. So now we have Zechariah's killed, Shalem's killed, Menahem comes along, he dies, and then Pekahiah comes along and reigns in his stead. All right, verse 24, and he did that which is evil in the sight of the Lord. This kind of a common refrain. And he departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. Takes all the way back to Jeroboam the first. But Pekah, the son of Remaliah, a captain of his. So here, the captain of the guard, here he's the great military commander. Remember, like Joab was the great military commander for David. Remaliah, great commander here, conspired against him and smote him in Samaria in the palace of the king's house with Argob and Ariah, and with him 50 men of the Gileadites, and killed him and reigned in his room. All right, so here we have death of Pekah. He's killed. So, conspires, rather. And the rest of the acts of Pekahiah and all that he did, behold, they're written in the book of the Chronicles of Kings of Israel. And in 52nd year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekah the son of Remaliah began to reign over Israel and Samaria, and reigned 20 years. And he did that which is evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who made Israel sin. And in the days of Pekah of Israel came Tilgath-Pileser from king of Assyria, and took Ijon and Abel Beth Maacah and Janoa and Kedesh and Hazor and Gilead of Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and carried them captive to Syria. And Hoshea the son of Elah made a conspiracy against Pekah the son of Remaliah, and smote him, and slew him, and reigned in his stead in the 20th year of Jotham the son of Uzziah. So Pekahiah is killed by Pekah. And Pekah is killed by Hoshea. So here we see regicide. Four kings are assassinated. We come down to the last Hoshea. He's the last. He's the king that is king in 722 when the northern kingdom falls. So here we see this history. is history. And it just goes wicked king after wicked king are killed by wicked people, and the next wicked group of people come along, kill that king, and so it's just a world of wickedness and regicide, murder, assassination. And each one thinks, I can do better. I want to have control. It's all about control. All about control here. And so no utopia, no blessing. They all turn from the Lord. So we see the destruction here. So when Hosea says in verse 7, they are all hot as an oven, and devoured their judges, and all their kings are fallen. And there is none among them that calleth unto me. So remember, Hosea, he prophesied before, 722 and after. And so he knew what was happening here and gives this rundown. So the kings did not help the nation at all, but the kings contributed. I mean, everybody contributed to the fall of the nation. I mean, it was a great unanimity around wickedness. And so Hosea is preaching to this crowd. He's preaching to this crowd, and a great wickedness involved here. All right, so verse 8. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned. Notice that he's still using the metaphor there. If not turned, a cake not turned, so I guess he'd be half-baked. So half-baked nation, because they, you know, connected with the oven. So what they produced here, using the oven motif, they turned the oven on, waited in secret, then they sprang when in the intensity of their the hot passion they had for all their wickedness, killed these kings off, and they didn't turn out as a good product, but a bad product. Who wants a half-baked cake? Half of it may be hard, the other half is soggy because it's not baked. Who wants to eat something like that? So he used a good analogy here. All right, then he says, strangers have devoured his strength. What strangers? Well, how about the kings of Assyria? Remember, they were bought off. So, nation that gets bought off has no internal power. It's compromised. It's destroyed. Some other nation owns them. Who owned the northern kingdom? Assyria did. And Assyria, after a while, just got upset with Hoshea, because he betrayed Assyria and began to trust in Egypt. And Assyria said, no, you're not going to do that. We'll just take everything. And they did. So what foolish, foolish behavior here for a nation. So strangers have devoured his strength, and he knoweth it not. Even ignorant. Oh, well, we'll give money to another nation. But still, we're autonomous. We're okay. Nobody can hurt us. And didn't even know it. Bought out and they didn't even know it. Yea, gray hairs are here and there upon him, yet he knoweth not. So the idea here of gray hairs is, gray hairs come upon the head kind of secretly. I mean, they don't come all at once. It's just one here, one there. And before you know it, hey, wake up one day, hey, I'm gray hair. What happened here? Oh, maybe you noticed the first one way back in your 20s. Remember that? I got a gray hair. Uh-oh. But it comes on subtle, very subtle. A couple gray hairs every year, so on, so on. So you go from dark-haired to gray-haired. One day you wake up and say, hey, I'm gray-haired. That's what he's saying here. Yea, gray hairs are here and there upon him, yet he knoweth it not. You've got some gray hairs, and you know what? You're going to have all gray hair. You've given the strangers, and strangers going to overtake you subtly. And so these are powerful analogies, aren't they? That's the problem with sin as well. A little sin here won't hurt me. A little sin here, several sins here won't hurt me. For you know it, you're in total wickedness. All right, so the pride of Israel testifieth to his face. See, proud. They're proud, puffed up people. They think they can do things without the Lord. They don't need the Lord. Oh, they'll go through religious motions, but they don't need the Lord. And they're proud and puffed up. And they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this. So they don't return. Things may be getting bad, but we'll turn them around. We'll get another king. This king will turn things around. And so we'll be able to practice our wickedness in a better way. So this king will do it, not that king. But they never turn back to the Lord. All right, so here he talks about their policy, the fatal policy that they have here. They've been bought out. They're being destroyed, not even realizing it. Verse 11, he used more analogies. Ephraim also is like a silly dove without heart. They call to Egypt and they go to Assyria and just wander around like a silly dove. Here's where Hoshea, once again, he began to send money to Egypt. 2 Kings 24. Began to send money to Egypt rather than giving tribute to Assyria. Fatal mistake. And so who's going to help me most? Going to be Egypt or Assyria? Back and forth. I don't know. I'll give money here, not giving it here. Silly dove. Wandering around like a silly dove. When they shall go, I will spread my net upon them. So the Lord knows how to catch silly doves. Knows how to catch them. I'll spread a net. And I will bring them down to the fowls as the fowls of the heaven. I will chastise them as their congregation hath heard. Going to bring judgment. How had their congregation heard? How had the people of Israel heard? By the prophets they raised up early in the morning, day after day after day, preaching to them, sin is going to bring judgment. You are going to be judged. I know your sin is very obvious, and you're going to be judged. Verse 13, woe unto them, for they have fled from me. Destruction unto them. Because they transgressed against me. So use the language, they fled. They have completely abandoned Jehovah. Way back with the first Jeroboam, they abandoned him. Fled from him. They've transgressed. Though I have redeemed them, see, salvation is provided for them. Salvation. In two aspects. In two aspects, there's the physical redemption that he took them out of Egypt. He delivered them into the promised land. There's a physical aspect. That doesn't necessarily mean it's all spiritual. That is, everybody who is saved. But he did redeem them physically. And those who believe in him among the northern kingdom, they have been redeemed spiritually as well. All right. So, though I have redeemed them, yet they've spoken lies against me. And I think the lies that they spoke against the Lord would be the lies that they leveled at the prophets who were spokesmen for the Lord. It says, and they have not cried unto me with their heart. See, no heart cry. When they howled upon their beds. So when disaster comes to them because of their wickedness. They're crying. They're yelling out. Probably yelling out to Baal. Where's Baal? They're not crying out to the Lord. They assemble themselves for corn and wine, and they rebel against me. So they go through the motions here, but still rebels. Though I have bound and strengthened their arms, and yet do they imagine mischief against me. So the Lord would bless them. He gave blessing to the northern kingdom, and that they continue to turn. They return not to the Most High. They are like a deceitful bow. Their princes shall fall by the sword for the rage of their tongue. This shall be the derision in the land of Egypt. So here they return, but not to the Most High. So that's significant. The Lord is the Most High. But if you look there in chapter 8, verse 9, notice the language there. It says, for they are gone up to Assyria. Oh, they'll go to somebody. They'll go to some high deity. But it's that behind the Assyrians. They're gone up to Assyria, but they won't go up to the Most High. They're like a deceitful bow. What's a deceitful bow? A slack bow. So a bow, arrow, a bow. Try to use a bow, and your string is slack. How far can you shoot that arrow? Won't do anything. And so you don't want to go to war with a deceitful bow or a slack bowstring. That's the idea. And that's what they're like. They're like a deceitful or slack, deceitful bow or slack bowstring. That's graphic. That brings out an image there. How effective is that? It's not effective at all. The princess shall fall by the sword. So certainly that has happened through these kings. We saw that. For the rage of their tongue, it brings out this, a raging. It shall be their derision in the land of Egypt. Egypt is going to mock them. Think of this. Egypt, when Hoshea went to Egypt, what a fool. He's coming to me. He wants my help. He's going to give me money. What a fool, but we'll take his money. We'll take this deceived king here, Hoshea, and we're laughing behind our backs. You give us that money. We'll have a straight face. As soon as we walk away, we're going to laugh at you. We're going to mock you. What fools. They trusted in Egypt. They always had a problem with Egypt. Remember, they wanted to go back to Egypt. They always wanted to go back to Egypt. What fools. And Egypt is laughing at them. And so here we see the nature of the northern kingdom. The nature of the northern kingdom. Now this obviously is a warning for them. It's a warning for all nations. It's a warning for all nations. All nations need to look to the Lord. If nations don't do that, then serious consequences. All right, so we see the destruction that's coming, and Hosea is preaching this message, and as all the prophets, they wanted the people's heart. The Lord wants the person's heart. And our heart is the only thing we can really control in this life. So we need to control it in line with the Lord and trust Him with whatever else is happening. Our Father, we praise you, bless us now. We thank you for this time to study this book. Help us help to be understandable and help us to make the application as well. We ask for, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.